from deep inside your radio.
Very deep indeed. From the home of the homeless. Wow. That feels strange to say. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard to our latest new affiliate on the ever-growing and yet ever-shrinking Le Show Network. How does that work? It's like life itself. You know, life is a life-changing experience. Anyway, welcome aboard. I know, I just throw out bumper stickers from time to time. It's something that happens. Welcome aboard to Radio Free Moscow. Yeah, I know, it's a dream come true, only about 35 years too late. But no, it's Moscow, Idaho. It must be pronounced Moscow or some different way. You know, like Cairo, Illinois? Moscow, something like that. Anyway, Radio Free Moscow, KRFP. Welcome aboard. Stick around. Good stuff. Always just around the... Always just possible. That's our promise here at the Le Show Dome. See, back in the Le Show Dome. Wow. Let me look around. Ugh. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Foley. Mark Foley, the former Florida congressman who resigned on Friday with, I think, more alacrity than anybody has done anything in Washington in about 17 decades. Man, he was out of there like a shot just because some emails got made public that made public the, well, his yearnings for a young former page. A young former male page. Page just needed some turning. You know what I'm saying? And interesting thing is, a couple of reports have been out. One that Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, who's the leader of the Republicans in the House, since the Republicans control the House, was warned about this months ago and just sort of, you should pardon the expression, sat on it. That report appears to be true. There's also a report that Foley, a couple of years ago, turned down a chance to run for the Senate. And I don't think this report is true because it says that his reason for not doing that was because the House pages are younger. Hello, welcome to the show. One man jury,
Oh, I got all the facts. Do you want to change your story? Well, now before the judge gets back, no one's calling you a liar, but you know, smoke without fire.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. Are they still here? Yes, they are. I saw one homeless gentleman this week ask at a farmer's market stand for some free juice. Juice, I said. And the proprietress said, no, I don't think so. And he was very insistent and then sort of defensive and then sort of pugnacious. And so finally, the proprietress of the stand said, well, okay, you want something free? He said, yeah. She handed him a free, fresh, organic cantaloupe. And his response was to angrily throw it to the ground and walk away. From the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And last week, there were no apologies of the week. Not to say that there weren't any apologies, we just didn't have room. So before we do anything else this week, and by we, I mean me, ladies and gentlemen, time for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Yes, it's only terrorists who are detained, only terrorists who have their habeas corpus rights abolished. How do we know that? Dateline Toronto, Canada's top Mountie. Ooh, that sounds like something Mark Foley would want to. No, excuse me. Canada's top Mountie apologized this week for the, quote, terrible injustices done to a Canadian Muslim spirited to Syria and tortured for 10 months on false suspicions of terrorist ties. Terrorists have their own line of ties? Don't tell Rush Limbaugh. Critics of the government in Canada demanded that the Prime Minister offer his own apology. Giuliano Zaccardelli, Commissioner of the Mounties, directed his remarks to Maher Arar. 4 years ago, he was detained in a New York airport and delivered to a Syrian prison by U.S. agents. Those agents were working on false information given to them by Canada. Quote, Mr. Arar, I wish to take this opportunity to express publicly to you and to your wife and your children how truly sorry I am for Royal Canadian Mounted Police actions that led to the, quote, terrible injustices that you experienced and that the pain and you and, that you and your family endured, unquote, Zaccardelli said, testifying before a parliamentary committee. His remarks on the case were Zaccardelli's first since a judicial inquiry on the controversy was released earlier this month, which found that the Mounties had given exaggerated and often flat-out false reports to U.S. intelligence agents, suggesting that Arar had terrorist connections and was the subject of a terrorist investigation. In fact, the exhaustive inquiry found he was an innocent computer programmer. The United States sent Arar to Syria as part of its extraordinary rendition program, in which terrorist suspects are treated to performances of classic songs by Bobby Darin in which terrorist suspects are secretly dispatched to other countries, some of which are known to practice torture. Sorry about the torture, babe. Hungary is... New story now. Hungary is determined to go forward with its new plan endorsed by the European Commission after years of huge budget deficits. Derailed earlier, hopes to adopt the euro. Hungary is adopting the euro. The Prime Minister announced this while apologizing for the tone of a leaked tape in which he swore frequently and said he had lied to win April's elections, which triggered protests last week. His profanity-littered speech was leaked. The Prime Minister, whose name I can't pronounce, offered his first public apology or for the language in the speech in which he said he and his party had, quote, lied in the morning and lied in the evening. See, that was his mistake. Left the afternoons free. Quote, of course I am sorry. These were the words of reproof, affection, and passion, he said. Dateline Houston, Andrew Fasto, the mastermind behind financial schemes that doomed Enron Corporation. Hey, you know, their logo was a crooked E. Wasn't that a tip-off? Fasto was sentenced this week to 6 years in prison, 4 years less than he had agreed to in a plea bargain by a judge who said that Fasto deserved leniency. Fasto's family said the judge has suffered enough. His wife has already served a year for her role in the scandal. Quote, I know I deserve punishment, said Fasto, who cried before the sentencing while telling the court he was sorry for what he had done. Quote, I accept it without bitterness. Fasto must serve all 6 years because there's no parole in the federal system. But there is leniency. Quote, to all of the victims, I apologize to you, he said, turning to the four people who spoke at the sentencing. I'm ashamed of what I did. He said he was committed to making up for his bad choices at Enron, so please send him money. No, he didn't say that. Excuse me. Dateline Lake George, New York State Controller Alan Hevesy this week proclaimed himself abjectly apologetic for failing to reimburse the state of New York for using a public employee as a chauffeur for his wife since 2003. Quote, I'm taking a pounding, and it's well-deserved. Is that Mark Foley? No, it's Alan Hevesy. He said at the annual fall meeting of the New York State Association of Counties, his first public appearance since his failure to pay for the state worker services was revealed. Quote, it was irresponsible for me. It's irresponsible for anybody. But for the controller of the state of New York, or comptroller, I think it was really inappropriate, he said. When the issue burst here last week or so, I said, oh, God, I really messed up here. I'm going to do everything I can to make up for this. I apologize to the citizens, he continued. I apologize to you. I apologize to the taxpayers. I apologize to my family, and I particularly apologize to my staff. And the reason is, boy, is this a distraction from us telling the story of what we've done in the comptroller's office. Boy, is he sorry. African National Congress Deputy President Jacob Zuma in South Africa has apologized for remarks he made about gays and lesbians, which earned him the wrath of civil rights organizations. Quote, I apologize unreservedly for the pain and anger my remarks may have cost, Zuma said in a statement. His apology follows as some South Africans, including gay and lesbian groups, questioned his ability to lead the country. On Sunday, during a Shaka Day commemoration in South Africa, in KwaZulu-Natal, Zuma reportedly said, quote, when I was growing up, a gay would not have stood in front of me. I would knock him out. He said his statement has been misinterpreted in various ways and may have hurt and angered the gay and lesbian community. Dateline London, the editor of Glamour magazine, has apologized after a reporter issued an appeal for, quote, photogenic, unquote, modern war widows. Jo Elvin said she was outraged and sorry that Military Families Against the War had been sent an email asking if they could provide case studies of women aged between 30 and 38 whose husbands had been killed in Iraq or Afghanistan. The email was condemned as demeaning and very insensitive by the organization. It will ask other widows groups not to cooperate with similar requests. The email said, quote, I need to be able to talk to them next week, and we will need to get them shot by the magazine ASAP. Glamour is very looks conscious, so at the risk of sounding ridiculous, they need to be photogenic, or at least comfortable in front of a camera! Exclamation point. Hey, man. Is it wrong to want to look at some hot widows? Dateline Nepal. Nepal's Maoist rebels have apologized to the widow of famed French climber Jean-Christophe Lafaillie for demanding that she fork out a tax to pay her last respects to her husband. Rebel leaders Prachanda and Baburam Bhattarai gave a letter of apology plus $136 refund to the French ambassador in Kathmandu. Our two leaders have said they apologize for the deeds of our party cadres. That should not have happened, said Suresh Alimagar, a Maoist official. Lafaillie disappeared in January while attempting a solo winter climb without oxygen of Mount Makalu. Katya, his widow, you think she's hot? And her two sons were forced to give Maoist rebels $136 when they went to the base camp earlier this year to say their farewells to the legendary climber, whose body has not yet been found. Our cadres should not have asked for the money, said Magar, because they were a special case. I wonder why. French? What do you think? Or maybe just hot. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And you know that the Congress, before it skedaddled out of town, that is to say out of Washington, this week passed President Bush's detainee interrogation and incarceration and whatever we want to do with him, Bill. The president's expected to sign it into law and to crow about it. And the critics of the harsh, I believe that's the president's word, for the techniques used by the CIA on detainees, which some of which John McCain says now are prohibited, but when they practiced them before, that's okay. You can't be prosecuted for that, and detainees who were harshed can still be tried and have that evidence used against them, the evidence out of their own mouths when they were being harshed. And as I say, critics focus on one technique. And, you know, far be it from me to advise anybody how to frame anything. But I do suspect that about half of the population thinks when they hear about this one technique that it refers to making somebody lie down on a lumpy waterbed. Well, isn't that waterbedding? Isn't that what they're doing? And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, there is language in the English language that refers to a technique that doesn't involve organ damage or severe physical pain or enduring physical harm to the body. We've all heard about it since we were kids. Chinese water torture. So, you know, if you want to be a critic of something that you claim is torture, maybe you should call it by what you think it is. Because otherwise, you know, otherwise, I'd say the field is wide open for the administration to just make waterboarding sound cool.
This weekend, the extreme just get extremer again. Double Extreme Sports Channel takes you to the first annual World Waterboarding Championships, sponsored by Slam Energy Drink. Classic or freestyle, your waterboarding action is right here. 2005 champion Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has a secret. He's got gold handcuffs to defend, and the only way to get them is through 3 days or more of world-class boarding. But there's a new kid on the cell block, number 3 in Al-Qaeda, and number 1 in the hearts of hardcore boarders worldwide. And he's got KSM in his sights. You know it's going to be nonstop brain and body punishing action. When the water starts pouring, it's all over for one of these competitors, baby. You'll be holding your breath big time, because you know they both are powering through the drowning that's wilder than the real thing ever was. If you miss a second, you miss it all. And if you miss it all, you'll have to wait 2 hours to see it again. World Waterboarding Championship, co-sponsored by Torture Activewear, the shoes that never fit. This weekend on Double Extreme Sports Channel, we put the scream in extreme. Extreme. Extreme.
Maybe an ambassador to England or France. May like to gamble, might like to dance. Maybe the heavyweight champion of the world. Maybe a social act with long string apples. You gotta serve somebody. Hey, you gotta serve somebody. Maybe the devil, maybe the Lord. You gotta serve somebody. Rock and roll addict prancing on a state. Drugs at your command and women in the cage. Maybe a business, some high degree thief. May call your doctor, may call your chief. You gotta serve somebody. Ooh, serve somebody. Might be the devil or the Lord. You gotta serve somebody, yeah. Maybe a state trooper, maybe a young Turk. Maybe the head of some big TV network. Maybe rich or poor, maybe blind or lame. Maybe living in another country under another name. But you gotta serve somebody. Ooh, you gotta serve somebody. Maybe the devil, maybe the Lord. You gotta serve somebody. Thank you.
Might like to wear silk. Might like to drink a whiskey. Might like to drink milk. Might like to eat caviar. Might like to eat bread. Sleeping on the floor, even on a king size bed. You gotta serve somebody. Ooh, you gotta serve somebody. Maybe the devil, maybe the Lord. You gotta serve somebody. Maybe a creature with spiritual pride. Maybe a council man taking bribes on the side. Working in a barbershop may know how to cut hair. Somebody's mistress or somebody's affair. You gotta serve somebody. You gotta serve somebody. Maybe the devil, maybe the Lord. You gotta serve somebody.
This is Le Show. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, normally we have a feature here on the broadcast, uncopyrighted. Please, just take it, use it, called The Buried Lead. But this week we have something a little bit hipper, the entire Buried cover story. This was a cover story in the international edition of Newsweek, uncovered by the Pittsburgh desk. But, you know, the national edition of Newsweek here in the Inside the Bubble had a cover story about Annie Leibovitz, photographer Annie Leibovitz, and her kids. You know, it's for the kids. Here's the story you missed, which is basically about the rise of jihadism in Afghanistan. Hardcore Taliban forces have filled the void where President Hamid Karzai's government barely exists, that is to say, outside the main towns. They've infiltrated, have the Taliban, from the relatively lawless tribal areas of, hello, Pakistan, where they had fled at the end of 2001. Once back inside Afghanistan, these committed jihadist commanders and fighters, aided by key sympathizers who had remained behind, have raised hundreds of thousands, if not thousands, of new local recruits, mainly for pay. They feed on the people's disillusion with the lack of economic progress, equity, and stability that Karzai's government, NATO, Washington, and the international community had promised. NATO officials say the Taliban seems to be flush with cash, thanks to the guerrillas' alliance with prosperous opium traffickers. Fighters are paid more than $5 a day, good money in Afghanistan, and at least twice what the Afghan National Army soldiers receive. The shortage of local police has led President Karzai to approve a plan allowing local warlords, often drug traffickers themselves, to rebuild their private armies. UN officials spent the last 3 years trying to disband Afghanistan's irregular militias, which are accused of widespread human rights abuses. Doesn't that sound like something that's going on in another country? It begins with an I. You know, just getting the militias back up. Now the warlords can rearm with the government's blessing in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is, quote, unfortunately well on its way to becoming a narco state, quoting NATO's Supreme Commander, Major General Jim Jones. Hey, Jim, you're not drinking the Kool-Aid, babe. Our friend Pakistan. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know that the moving pixel writes, and having written moves on. So last week, the man in the media spotlight in this country was President Perv Musharraf of Pakistan. He's moved on, replaced by Bob Woodward. But Musharraf was in Britain, plugging his book, doing every interview imaginable, and saying some interesting stuff, like when he's asked about the support of the Pakistan Intelligence Service, the ISI, for the Taliban, he says,
Pakistan Army is an extremely disciplined army. ISI is manned by regular military officers. I post them there. It is my ignorance and my incompetence if these people are going against what I want them to do. They do exactly what they are told to do. In the past, they were told to train Mujahideen, to train Taliban, and form mercenary groups and send them inside to fight Soviet Union. And they did that for 10 years. Now they are told to reverse everything and go in the other direction, and they are doing that exactly. Who defeated Al-Qaeda? 700 of them we caught from our cities. Then we captured their sanctuaries in South and North Waziristan. Who did that? ISI did that. Who arrested Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Abu Zubaydah, Abu Talha, all these characters? Who did that? ISI did it.
The Pakistan government, in the person of Perv Musharraf, claims to have been paid millions of dollars by the United States for turning over terrorists. Oh, we know they were terrorists. They can't possibly be people that we just don't like to turn in for the money. Nope. No, sir. Not the Pakistanis. This week, you know that maybe you don't know. Maybe you've just been listening. This week, a British academic research paper was leaked to the BBC from a British defense think tank, written by, quote, a man with military background who's linked to the UK's Secret Intelligence Service, or SIS. That paper said the United Kingdom went into Afghanistan, quote, with its eyes closed, and revealed that a secret deal to extricate British troops from Iraq so they could focus on Afghanistan failed when British military leaders who had recommended that course of action were overruled. The paper also echoed last weekend's leaked NIE here in this country, National Intelligence Estimate, that the Iraq War has, quote, acted as a recruiting sergeant for extremists across the Muslim world. But back to our friend Perv. He, in this BBC interview, revealed for the first time, to my knowledge, that Pakistan won the Cold War.
We fought the Soviet Union for you. We won the Cold War for you, and we did that how? You brought in 20 to 30,000 Mujahideen from all over the Muslim world into this area. You trained Taliban, armed them, equipped them, trained them, and sent them inside. All this for 10 years had its fallout on Pakistan. And then you left us high and dry in 1989 with 4 million refugees in Pakistan and warfare there between all the tribal warlords of Afghanistan. Then come Taliban. And all that impact again on Pakistan. Who was supporting us? Nobody. Everyone was off. Then comes 9/11. And now you realize that the situation is that this, for 20 years, whatever has happened in this area, with all its fallout, now unwind. Who's Al-Qaeda? The 20 to 30,000 Mujahideen which we brought. Who took them out anywhere? Who helped us take those people out? So please, let's understand the reality. This all is an import because of what we did for you. Now we need to correct the situation. Yes, indeed. But don't please think that it is a Pakistan environment. If you see Pakistan before 1979, Pakistan was perfectly fine. We were going perfectly fine. The way we are blamed, I take exception to that. The world must understand our problem. It is for you that we did it, and we are suffering. We are suffering. Our national fabric has been torn. And now, without understanding, everyone blames us. What the hell is happening in Pakistan?
You know, I feel bad because, you know, the madrasas, the religious schools, which are paid for by the Saudis but located in Pakistan and are training old Pakistanis, Arabs, Brits in a certain kind of Wahhabism. It's not their fault, the Pakistanis. They're just, what are they? Just helpless landlords. But the history, you know, ladies and gentlemen, is correct. The Taliban was a creation of ourselves with the aid of the Pakistani intelligence service. So he's pointing the finger. He sounds almost like Saddam Hussein in that way of saying, hey, man, you were with me. I was with you. Then something changed. And now you're, it's the reverse. hey, I was on the thing with the Taliban, and now I'm against the Taliban because you told me the thing, and don't blame me. But just in case we don't get the message, up till now, General Pervis, don't call him Perv, Musharraf, has a parting thought or two on this BBC interview for us.
You will be brought down to your knees if Pakistan doesn't cooperate with you. That is all that I would like to say. Pakistan is the main ally. If we were not to be with you, you won't manage anything. Let that be clear. And if ISI is not with you, you will fail. Let that be very clear also. Remember my words.
What were those words? Damn. Ladies and gentlemen, time. This is Le Show. Time now for a copyrighted feature, news from outside the bubble. From the Times of London, NATO this weekend failed to find any volunteers to contribute 2,500 reinforcements that are needed for combat duty in Afghanistan. After 2 days of talks in Slovenia, defense ministers from the 26-nation alliance said that nobody had produced the reserve force first requested by NATO commanders more than 3 weeks ago. British Defense Secretary Des Brown asked NATO colleagues to step up to the plate. You know, they don't even have a plate in Britain. That's right. The plate is from baseball. He's asking them to step up to something they don't have. To help British, Canadian, and Dutch forces currently engaged in fierce fighting with the Taliban in southern Afghanistan. There was no offer for more troops. There were some encouraging signs, but it is unlikely anything will be decided until our next meeting in November, said a British official at the talks. But more, senior British officers have been pressuring the government, this is from that academic research paper, have been pressuring the government to withdraw British troops from Iraq and concentrate on what they now regard as a more worthwhile and winnable battleground in Afghanistan. They believe there's a limit to what British soldiers can achieve in southern Iraq, and it is time the Iraqis took responsibility for their own security. Pressure for military chiefs for an early and significant cut in the 7,500 British troops in Iraq is motivated also by extreme pressure being placed on soldiers and those responsible for training them. What is more important, Afghanistan or Iraq? A senior defense source asked the Guardian newspaper this week. There is a group within the Ministry of Defense pushing hard to get troops out of Iraq to get more into Afghanistan. British military chiefs have been losing patience with the slow progress made in building a new Iraqi national army and security services. Significantly, they now say the level of violence in Iraq will not be a factor determining when British troops should leave. But wait, there's more news outside the bubble. Way more. Right here. Deadline Australia. Australia Wheat Board executives could face criminal charges under federal anti-terror laws for funneling money to Saddam Hussein. The deposed Iraqi leader, it now emerges, was the architect of the wheat kickback scheme being investigated in Australia, where the Australian Wheat Board, which is in charge of all exports of wheat from Australia, were paying so-called trucking fees that went straight to Saddam. A legal document shows that Saddam issued a directive in October 1999 that the Australian Wheat Board be made to pay Iraq $12 per metric ton before wheat shipments were unloaded. The Iraqis wanted advice and equipment in 2001 for a program of 100 reinforced concrete bunkers they hope to build. Responding to a query about the bunkers from another manager of the Australian Wheat Board, manager Daryl Borlase wrote in an email, quote, "The bunkers will have cement walls and floors, so they're actually designed for burying the Kurds under the cement? Question mark. They intend to build them with fumigation capability, so the mind boggles as to whether they're fumigating insects or any other pest that pisses them off, unquote. Prosecutors said the document helped to establish the Australian Wheat Board managers were well aware of the brutality of Saddam Hussein's regime, to which they illegally paid $290 million in Australian dollars, disguised as trucking fees. He said such evidence could establish whether or not it might be said that the Australian Wheat Board committed an offense under terrorism offenses. It's not the UN, ladies and gentlemen. It's Australia. Deadline London. From the Asia Times, there have been critics of the U.S. military actions underway in Afghanistan, but now military commanders from the Brits have begun to question just what they're doing in Afghanistan. An officer who was an aide to the British forces in Helmand, the southern district of Afghanistan that has witnessed the strongest fighting between the Taliban and coalition forces, has come out with strong criticism of the British Army in Afghanistan and has quit the Army. Captain Leo Doherty said the British campaign in Helmand province was, quote, a textbook case of how to screw up an counterinsurgency. The military is just one side of the triangle, he says. Where were the Department for International Development and the Foreign Office? He asked. As forces sat back with little to offer, the Taliban hit back and British troops there were bunkered up and under daily attack, he wrote. Now the ground has been lost, and all we're doing is surviving. It's completely barking mad. Oh, yes. Deadline Washington from the Times of India. A British analyst has stirred a hornet's nest. This is the same academic research paper mentioned earlier. By revealing the United States is bankrolling Pakistan's military ruler, Perv Musharraf, to the extent of $70 to $80 million a month. While much attention has been drawn to the analyst's contention that Pakistan's spy agency, ISI, is supporting terrorism, the portion about the payola from Musharraf has embarrassed Washington, which is already chafing from Musharraf's own disclosure that the U.S. paid bounty money to the Pakistani government for handing over supposed terrorists. Musharraf knows that time is running out for him. This is a quote. At some point, the U.S. is likely to withdraw funding and possibly even protection of him, estimated at $70 to $80 million a month, the analyst wrote, adding, quote, without U.S. funding, his position will become increasingly tenuous, unquote. While it's possible the analyst might have meant U.S. funding Pakistan and not Musharraf individually, this comes on top of Musharraf's claim that the CIA has paid Pakistan undisclosed sums of reward money, although he later retracted that claim when faced with questioning arising from the fact that it's illegal for the U.S. to pay governments. He then indicated the payments might have gone to individuals, but did not identify the individuals. The Bush administration has refused to comment on the matter. Still news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. You don't know any of this, do you? Do you? Raise your hand. The United States Coast Guard has started to patrol the Great Lakes with machine guns mounted on their vessels as they're conducting live ammunition training drills on the U.S. side of the Canadian border to prepare officers to combat terrorists flooding across the border from Canada by boat. The automatic weapon drills started earlier this year but came to light only in the past 2 weeks after information about the Coast Guard's move to create 34 permanent live fire training zones in the Great Lakes were published in the U.S. Federal Register. This is from the Globe and Mail in Canada. And finally, the U.S. Treasury's terrorist finance tracking program violated the privacy of up to 7,800 international institutions in its secret trawl through financial records held by the Belgian firm SWIFT. The Belgian Data Protection Registrar declared this week that the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications, SWIFT, which handles financial transactions on behalf of banks and other financial institutions in the G10 countries, had violated Belgian data protection law by complying with the U.S. Treasury's secret investigation. Good Lord, ladies and gentlemen, we violated Belgian privacy laws. Break out the chocolates. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
took the monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzard tried to throw the monkey off his back. The monkey grabbed his neck and said, "Hey, listen, Jack, straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Ain't no use in diving. What's the use of jiving? Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top." Buzzard told the monkey, "You're choking me. Release your hold and I'll set you free." The monkey looked the buzzard right dead in the eye. Said, "Your story's touching, but it sounds like a lie. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and do right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top." Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Rock up, boot top, bap, boot top, top. Monkey looked the buzzard right dead in the eyes. The story's touching, but it sounds like a lie. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and do right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new congressional analysis shows the Iraq War is now costing taxpayers almost $2 billion a week. That is such a deal. Because it's nearly twice as much as in the first year of the conflict 3 years ago, 20% more than last year. The Pentagon is spending more on establishing regional bases to support the extended deployment and scrambles to fix or replace equipment damaged in combat. But you got to do that. The total cost of military ops at home and abroad since 2001, including the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, topping $500 billion. The operating cost spike includes a 20% increase over last year in Afghanistan. Comes even though troop levels in both Iraq and Afghanistan have remained stable. The reports attribute the rising costs in part to a higher pace of fighting in both countries. Another factor is the building of more extensive infrastructure to support troops and equipment in and around Afghanistan and Iraq. The construction of so-called semi-permanent support bases has picked up in recent months, according to the Boston Globe, making it increasingly clear the U.S. military will have a presence in both countries for years to come. U.S. maintains it's not building permanent military bases in Iraq or Afghanistan. But for the first time, a major factor in the growth of war spending is the result of a dramatic rise in, quote, investment costs or spending needed to sustain a long-term deployment, don't you know? U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said this week there was no way to measure if more Islamic extremists were being created than killed thanks to American-led operations in A&I. Asked about that U.S. intelligence report that concluded the Iraq War had spread Islamic radicalism, Rumsfeld said intelligence could be faulty and sometimes flat wrong. And dumbness? He didn't respond to that because he wasn't asked that. President Bush barely mentioned the war in Iraq when he met with Republican senators behind closed doors in the Capitol Thursday morning and was not asked about the course of the war, according to Senator Trent Lott. No, none of that. He said, "You're the only ones who obsess on that. We don't, and the real people out in the real world don't for the most part," regarding the Iraq war. Lott went on to say he has difficulty understanding the motivations behind the violence in Iraq. Quote, "It's hard for Americans, all of us, including me, to understand what's wrong with these people," he said. "Why do they kill people of other religions because of religion? Why do they hate the Israelis and despise their right to exist? Why do they hate each other? Why do Sunnis kill Shiites? How do they tell the difference? They all look the same to me," unquote Trent Lott. Ask the Irish, babe. Just ask the Irish. Condoleezza Rice, according to Bob Woodward's new book, hired Philip Zelikow, an old friend, and coincidentally, a staff director at the, I think the staff director of the 9/11 Commission, to send him to Iraq when she took over as Secretary of State. She needed ground truth. That is not to say truth ground into mush, a full detailed report from the ground. 2 weeks after Rice became Secretary of State, Zelikow presented her with a 15-page, single-spaced, secret memo. This is February last year. Quote, "At this point," he said, "Iraq remains a failed state shadowed by constant violence and undergoing revolutionary political change," unquote. Well, that's what the president was telling us, that it's hard. The insurgency was, quote, "being contained militarily, but it was, quote, quite active, leaving Iraqi civilians feeling, quote, very insecure." In sum, Zelikow told Rice, the United States effort suffered because it lacked an articulated, comprehensive, unified policy. You know, those are so overrated. Woodward also reports the president met often with Henry Kissinger, as did Dick Cheney. Says Woodward, Kissinger's advice was to declare very simply, quote, "victory is the only meaningful exit strategy." Says Woodward, Kissinger's fighting the Vietnam War again because, in his view, the problem in Vietnam was that we lost our will. You know, President Bush met with Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf and Afghan President Hamid Karzai for a highly publicized dinner at the White House. The two leaders refused to shake hands with each other before the dinner. I don't know if there were any photo ops after the dinner. We don't really know what went on during the dinner. Or do we?
Of course, Mr. President, this isn't the way we usually eat here. Mm-hmm. A little fancier than I like. Of course, Laura likes a little fancy for guests. You know, didn't figure you'd want just a big old slab of beef. I mean, in the cow sacred to you anyway, President Mushy?
No, sir. Hmm? That's India. Or somewhat less than a friendly neighbor.
Well, good idea to consider your neighbors sacred, even if they aren't friendly. Gets them off guard, don't you think, President Karzai?
This is what, lamb?
Yeah, I think so, although they gussy it up so much, could be any old meat. So, fellas, got us a little what Condi likes to call a Rubicon's Cube here. You know, you're a lot of misunderstandings, lots of bad feelings, you know, getting in the way of our freedom agenda.
Mr. President.
Now, I owe you an apology, President Mushy, from way, way back. Some smart Adam back in my first election asked me who was the president of Pakistan, and I kind of did my C student thing.
No, I remember. We saw the video clips. We had a good laugh at your at the expense of ourselves for not being more well-known in your country. Hence, in a way, my book, you know, all these years later. Maybe I'll owe you some book royalties before this is all over.
Yeah. See, car guy, maybe you should write a book. Get all out in hard covers. Make a bundle rather than gum up the freedom agenda deal with your anxieties.
Mr. President, if I ever got enough free time to write even a blog, life would be much easier. However, with the continued existence of terrorist training camps just on the other side of our border...
My dear friend, Mr. President, fails to see that it's the
dominance of the warlords in his country that is supporting...
You know what? I see where this is going, fellas. See, if I wanted to hear endless arguing about which side is right about what policy initiative, I have a whole cabinet full of cabinet members here just itching to do it. So, you know, car guy, if you want to write to a blob, maybe that's what you should do. You know, take the pressure off.
Hey.
You know what I do?
About what?
Taking the pressure off. Mm. You know, it's hard work. You fellas know that. Mm-hmm. Good people. Working hard. I get some brush brought up to the ranch from, you know, some real ranches nearby. And I remove it. Take it back where it came from. Good, productive physical labor. Because, you know, the brain's got enough on its mind.
Mr. President, we have not heard yet from your friend Dr. Kissinger.
Hey, Mushy, that's a good idea. Henry over here is just usually more of a listener. You know, lots of advisors you'll find want to do the talking. Finding a good listener, that's like not trading away your star outfielder. Henry, take a couple swats up here. How do we get these two neighbors to stop fussing at each other?
Well, gentlemen, as I've had the privilege to advise President Bush in private on numerous occasions, there's absolutely no substitute for victory.
Everything else is salted peanuts. Didn't you tell me that?
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. I said that in Vietnam, withdrawing troops was like salted peanuts in the...
Dr. Kissinger, forgive me for interrupting your metaphor. It's actually a simile. He said like.
Well, it's about time somebody did. See, we got to fight this thing together or we're all going to end up fighting this thing separately, and nobody wants that. Least of all the American people who are expecting us to walk out of this dinner with shaking hands.
Dr. Kissinger, I just wanted to observe that saying there's no substitute for victory isn't really, with all greatest respect for a man who shared a Nobel Peace Prize with the man against whom he was engaging in the war that he ended, it isn't really a prescription for how we go forward. It lacks a certain nuance.
Well, we tried nuance in Vietnam. The American people don't want nuance. The American Congress doesn't want nuance. And...
Well, sir, he's looking at me, but see, I'm a big fan of nuance in the right situations, but in the middle of an endless war, which has got to make you wonder in the first place how exactly you can figure out where the middle is. See, you've got enough problems without what I like to call the other N-word. See, the first N-word is... Well, that's weird. Who knows I'm here? Dining Eagle.
41, sorry to bother you at dinner time. Just saw the early sneak of the leak of the Woodward book and need
41, I'm here with President Mushy and President Car Guy.
You've given them nicknames, too?
Hey, listen, anything to break some icebergs here. So, yeah, I heard he was...
It says in the book that you appointed Rumsfeld because you knew I didn't trust him.
Well, sir, I got these presidents here.
Because you just wanted to prove me wrong.
And they're eating, and, see, Car Guy doesn't think that Mushy is doing enough to clean out the Madras.
Mm-hmm.
Mushy doesn't think Car Guy is cleaning out the warlords. And me, personally, you know, in the middle of an endless war, I'm beginning to think maybe having a few warlords on our side isn't that bad a deal, so...
Just wanted you to know something, Sprout.
It's okay with you if I proved you wrong?
Didn't say that. But think you should know. Always liked Rumsfeld. Can't imagine how you got that other impression. Guess we should have talked about it. Guess we should talk more.
Yes, sir. Well...
Okay, no, you're busy. Talk to you later, 43.
Okay, 41. Okay, Mushy, Car Guy, Dr. Kissinger. Who wants seconds? Because I am one hungry hombre.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, F is for FEMA. Some local governments in Louisiana say FEMA underestimated the costs associated with repairing the state's damaged infrastructure. Damaged by what? Yeah, all right. Officials say they've grossly underfunded to repair waterlogged buildings, cracked pipes, and crumbled streets. Many local governments are afraid to hire contractors to fix problems for fear Washington won't reimburse them. FEMA officials admit some estimates may be too low. What else is new? Ladies and gentlemen, the show returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ 7.415 megahertz, up and down your internet wherever you want it around the globe at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, live and archived. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. Available as a podcast, free podcast, at kcrw.com and at iTunes. And it'll be just like Perv winning an election, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Really? All righty. Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. Hey, if you're listening to the show on Sunday, why not join me Monday morning in watching Judith Owen on the Today program, the Today Show. Remember NBC? It's still there. Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Take This Melon, baby. Home of the homeless.